the best decisions I've ever made because of what I'm getting out of it on the other side, which is audience participation and total investment into what we love more than anything, which is the ability to tell a story in a way that people can identify with and are emotional in reaction to.
That was Josh Brolin, who plays Thanos in the new movie Avengers Endgame, which we're going to talk about today. I'm Neil Rosen.
He's one of a cast of thousands.
He is one of a cast of thousands. I'm joined, as always, by Bill Brigoli.
That would be me.
And Bill McCuddy.
I'm the only one who hasn't seen Avengers Endgame. Pinch
and,
me.
And my, the three of us, Mike Sargent, who's joining us today. Say hello, Mike.
Hey, I'm here.
That's right. And we're going to talk about Avengers Endgame. And we all saw it last night. We're taping this on a Wednesday. We saw it Tuesday night at a screening. And
I saw a better movie instead.
We'll talk about that later. But I will say this before we even launch into this movie, that I am not a fan of comic book superhero movies. And the fact that I thought this movie was terrific speaks volumes about the movie, because I was not looking forward to seeing this. I don't like this kind of stuff at all. With rare instances do I actually enjoy these films. And I, at 3 hours and 1 minute, which is the running time on this particular film, I was not bored and I was very entertained. Mike, what did you think of the film?
Well, first of all, I got to say that we have to acknowledge that this is historical, that the idea of you know, 21 films over a 10-year period,
22.
All taking place in the same universe. It's kind of a fantastic thing. It's never been done before. So that's one. And this is the state of event filmmaking. Avengers Endgame. It's not just a film. It's an event. You know, it's an event. It's already broken all the records. It's already made $300 million. And it hasn't even opened. So I say all that going in to say expectations are high for everybody. My expectations were, I love superheroes. I grew up on it. I didn't love the original Avengers as much as everybody did. Age of Ultron, we don't have to talk about it. Infinity War, I thought it was good. This is better than all the other Avengers movies.
Wow.
Brigoli, you agree?
I liked it. A lot of people said that they cried. Yeah. 45 minutes into it, I got a bloody nose. How do you like that?
Were you sitting in the balcony?
No, I was sitting right in the middle, and all of a sudden, I felt blood rushing into my throat from my nose.
Oh, my God.
I had a major nosebleed in the middle of... it wasn't even an action scene. They were just talking.
Okay. Well,
here's the thing. As someone who's not a fan of this, who really enjoyed it, what really struck me, to Mike's point here, is that I've seen a lot of these Marvel movies, not just the Avenger movies, the Ant-Man movie, the Iron Man movies,
we don't have time for all 22.
And the fact that, you know, my complaint with some of these previous Avengers movies is it just seems like a contractual obligation to try to, like, okay, we've got to give Scarlett Johansson 3 minutes of screen time. We've got to give Mark Ruffalo 2 minutes of screen time. Whatever. And I did not feel that here. It's funny. It's good. I mean, the action doesn't even really kick in till like 2 hours into the thing. It's more like just a story, which is something that I like.
I could have bled out totally by the time that the action kicked into this movie. And the beginning is, let's face it, the beginning's rather sad and somber.
Well, it picks up where the last one left off, where it's kind of like half of the universe is destroyed, which is where
I'm the guy listening to this that hasn't seen it. And also I'm the guy here that hasn't seen it. So does somebody, with no spoilers for anybody, does somebody major die?
Yeah, several major people die.
So that's my first question. Does anybody major die? Yes, a couple of major people die. My second question is, since this is the very last one, if you sit through all of the credits, is there a scene of some kind at the very, very end?
No.
And did everyone in the audience sit there waiting to see if something was going to happen?
Yes, they did.
Here's what happened.
And that's great, too. That's great, too, because it really, just like the beginning of this movie, you're like, okay, how the hell they get out of this? At the end of this, you're like, okay, now what? Look at the slate.
I love that 500 people were trained SEALs last night in a Manhattan screening.
No, what happened? That's not what happened. So the movie ends and the credits come on. And, you know, there's the big credits as opposed to, like, you know, best boy, art director,
the crawl,
frame
the
painter.
Right.
You know, so, and I'd say about a quarter of the audience when the credits started left the theater. But I'd say three quarters of the theater remain to see some sort of after credit sequence.
Yes.
And then you sit through the main credits for a few minutes. And then all of a sudden the crawl of those, hundreds and hundreds of names comes up and you go, okay, there's not going to be a post-credit sequence, which is kind of cool because it's the end.
I get that. I think that's perfect, except I would have loved some outtakes or something.
Well, they don't do that.
That'll be on
I'm
the
Groot.
I don't know.
Anything.
What I liked about the movie is one of the things that I liked about the movie is they literally used almost every single character that I could think of in every one of those 22 Marvel movies. I mean, even the most, and if you've watched a lot of these movies, you go to yourself like, oh yeah, that's so-and-so from that I saw 10 years ago.
All right,
anybody
that's not in it, is Gwyneth Paltrow in it?
Everybody's in it. Everybody's in it.
So nobody's missing.
They bring out Michael Douglas from Ant-Man. I mean, everybody's in this movie.
They bring out the kid from Iron Man 3. They bring everybody.
Right. Everybody.
Tilda fucking Swinton.
That's correct.
Yes. Everybody's
and that,
in this movie.
I mean, all of a sudden it's like, wow, there's the cast of Guardians of the Galaxy. I mean, it's like, there's the cast of Black Panther. I mean, it's just, they didn't omit anybody.
All right,
have
you been hearing how this could break every conceivable opening weekend?
Absolutely.
No, but
absolutely.
Wait a minute, Mike. $900 million worldwide in one weekend? That's what I'm hearing.
They say a billion.
I can see that.
They say a billion dollars.
A billion.
It's going to make a billion dollars.
It's pretty close to a billion.
Neil just rounded up.
No, I heard a billion.
Up.
He never does that with his weight.
Or his age.
Or his IQ. No, he does it with his IQ. All right, so look, we're recommending this, obviously. I haven't seen it, but you guys are all...
Well, as
I
said...
Can I say a couple more things?
Yeah,
why
please
would we
do.
Stop you?
Well, I got to say, here's one of the things that makes it great, and I think this is probably what took Neil by surprise, considering, the superhero genre where certain things we're used to. What this does is the smartest thing that Marvel has done throughout this whole series is not only give every film its own voice, but give each film its own genre. Like Thor is a fish out of water and Winter Soldier is a spy movie. And this is a real blend of genres. There is much drama in this, probably more drama than there is action. And it's all good because you're so invested at this point that you love these characters, you care about what's going to happen or not happen to them, and it works.
And because there's so much storyline and so many characters, they don't rely on a lot of cheap, big CGI stuff to move the story along?
Well, there's a...
There is, in the end,
a lot of CGI
really
in that last hour of that movie.
Really good acting.
Neil says CGI at the end, though.
Well, come on, it's a Marvel movie. There's always CGI. Some of the characters are pure CGI.
Thing is, my big complaint with comic book movies and with action movies in general is they sacrifice storyline and plot for action sequences. And that's what I liked about this movie was the fact that there was 2 hours, as Bill Brigoli agreed with me, before you get to really any action to speak of. And it's just story. And I'm big on – that's my big thing is story. And this was got me involved in the story. And then, now you're in the – now, Bill Brigoli said – to me last night, you thought the action scene at the last hour, they could have cut some of that action.
I would have cut 20 minutes out of that.
Could you take 20 minutes out of the last hour, Mike Sargent?
Sure, you could cut down the action, but I think that this was a deeply satisfying sequel and end to it's as close as we're going to get to an epic superhero movie, and it's peaks and valleys. You're going to laugh, you're going to cry, you're going to gasp, and you're going to applaud.
Did you cry, Mike? Did you cry?
Well, I didn't cry, but people do. People will.
I had a family sitting next to me, and the kid looked about 11 or 12 years old,
I laughed,
and he was crying.
Gasped.
He was crying.
And
he was crying.
All right. This is turning
Captain
into Fox
America.
And Friends. Everyone's talking over everybody.
Oh, all right. I can't hear. Captain America does have his Rocky moment. I will say that.
Does everybody build the wall?
Okay, calm down. Does Star Wars have to take a page from the ends of series out of this book?
Ah, good question.
That's a good question. Star Trek should too.
Well,
what you're both saying is you'd really like to see all of these things end. And if they, but maybe you aren't saying that, but if they do, this is a good template or blueprint for how things should do it.
Better endings that Kirk had.
Well, as Mike said, which is really on the nose, is that there's never been, or not on the podcast, but he told this to me, where there's never been a series where there's been 21 movies, this is the 22nd movie, 21 movies where complete separate entities, and then they kind of incorporate the whole thing.
Yes!
I mean, Star Wars, you can't really, like, I'm sitting there in awe going, oh my God, here's the cast, the Robert Redford's in the movie.
What about The Lord of the Rings? What about, no, but I'm trying to think of series that have ended.
You hear what I said? But they bring Robert Redford in. I mean, now, I don't know if that was footage from the movie that he shot with Captain America. I think it was the second Captain America film, but nonetheless.
Winter Soldier.
Yeah, I mean, I'm in awe of all these people they brought back. Now, you can't really do that in Star Trek or Star Wars, although Star Trek 2 did it with the Wrath of Khan. You know, they brought that from, you know, the villain with Ricardo Montalban from one of the series, and that was kind of cool. But I don't think, there's nothing I could think of where you could bring in 21 previous casts from movies into a movie like that.
And you know what? I didn't give a damn about any of that.
What did you care about?
I did not care that they brought all those people back. If anything, it slows it down. Oh, look, it's so-and-so. Oh, look, it's this guy.
You are not a fan. You're not a fan.
Tony Stark dies, doesn't he? Just say it.
No, we're not going to tell you who dies and who lives. We're not going to do that.
If you want to figure that out, just find out whose contracts are ending.
Well, you have.
But somebody does get a sex change. That's all I'll say.
What? Please not Scarlett Johansson.
What's the name?
She's coming back as Black Widow, right?
I'm not saying nothing.
No, she's. But they've announced that's in pre-production, so that's not a spoiler.
No, we're not going to tell you anything.
We're not going to tell you anything.
Let's leave it at this. In the last movie, Black Panther dies, okay? So, you know, in a comic book universe, Mike and I had this conversation this afternoon. You know, in a Superman comic book a number of years ago, they killed Superman, okay? And they brought him back. And in Star Trek,
Spock.
The search for Spock, he dies in one movie and they did a mind meld and they brought him back. So, you know, you're not dealing in a realistic universe like Love Story where Ally McGraw dies and that's the end of the story. You're dealing with, you know, creatures from outer space.
So what you're saying is they could resurrect this. You watch this and you go, this really is the end.
I'm saying in a comic book superhero movie, you could do anything. You could do any. You could do some, let's do the time warp again from Rocky
Horror. But your sense is, Neil, out of respect to the fans, this really is the end. This is it. They've said it's the end, and it has a satisfying ending.
There's many more Marvel movies that are on the drawing board.
Dealing with different time.
Well, Spider-Man is in this movie, for example, and there's another Spider-Man. Tom Holland, isn't that the name of the guy, Mike, who plays Spider-Man?
If they had, wanted to do it justice, they should have had like three different Spider-Men.
Well, let me put it this way. I think that it would not be beyond them to announce movies that are coming and then they don't come because they don't want you to know characters are dying. And that may be part of what they've done here. That's all I'm going to say.
Okay. But whoever dies, you could bring them back in flashbacks. You could bring them back in holographic messages that they brought, that they sent to people. Oh, yeah. That you could bring them back.
They could come back as a force ghost.
You know, in a like even, you know, Jor-El and Superman, Marlon Brando was dead, but he left these stupid green ice messages to talk to Superman. I mean, you could bring anybody back, you know?
All right.
So that's that. So let's move on. Bill Brigoli saw was an HBO series.
Yeah. Gentleman Jack. This is the kind of rowdy Western tell us about it, because
it's not a Western. It takes place in England in the 1830s.
Oh, I'm thinking of something else.
Yeah, yeah.
Gentleman Jack.
Who stars in this?
Saran Jones, her name is. She's Ann Lister, who was in the 1830s England, a lesbian, out and proud and dressed like a man. So she's pretty butch. This is sort of like a Jane Austen novel turned inside out. She comes from money, and she wants even more money. So like a guy in a Jane Austen novel, she decides she's going to find a rich woman and marry her.
Yeah.
And the Gentleman Jack comes about. This is based on a true story, by the way. That's what all the neighbors referred to her as, jokingly. Everybody knew that she liked women. It's not like some poor girl back in the 1800s who was closeted and society at that time didn't understand. She's doing what she's doing. She also, this woman kept a 25-volume diary. She wrote down every day.
So this is a real woman.
It's a real woman.
This is based on a real...
Based on a real woman. And the woman who plays it, again, Saran Jones, her name is, she does it really well. She's tough sometimes and then very vulnerable other times. Her heart's on her sleeve. She really falls for women.
Okay, I got no interest in this. Guys, jump in here.
What do you think, Mike? We play a game. Has
listeners
has
know. Mike, would you watch this
you
or
on
not?
This thing?
You know, I got a lot of stuff I gotta watch. So stuff that I might want to watch, I don't have time. Do I want to see a period lesbian drama? If I knew somebody was like, oh, we gotta watch this, I'd be open, but I wouldn't be running. You know. But okay. Then again, Bill Bergoli, you know, needs to amp it up, Bill.
Amp it up
me.
Even more. It's only one episode that I've seen, Mike.
He didn't sell you.
Is it a limited series or is it the 8 episodes and we're done?
I don't know. We'll have to watch and find out.
Okay.
Would you recommend it?
Yeah, I do recommend it. I think people should check it out. It's fun to watch. And Bill's wife said she's going to watch it.
All right. So that means I have to fucking watch it. All right. I'm screwed.
Uh-huh. Well, okay.
I saw a great movie last night while you guys were sitting at end.
Yeah, talk about it.
Well, I think I'm not supposed to talk about it yet. Called Booksmart, and it's one of the funniest high school, end of high school comedies, starring Jonah Hill's sister, Beanie Feldstein, I think, and a couple of other people that you haven't seen before that are laugh out loud funny. And the headline here is directed by first-time director Olivia Wilde. And her husband, Jason Sudeikis, is in it, in a cameo. Very, very, very funny. And it's going to make a shitload of money. It's called Booksmart.
It's called Booksmart. And we're going to talk about it in more detail when we get closer to the release date.
Yes, I think people assume that, Neil. Are you buying time while you're looking at your phone
trying to do, okay? What I'm trying to do is, as I was listening to Bill Bergoli talk about Gentleman Jack, I can't think of the name of the film, but there was this really wonderful film I saw 20 years ago about a woman who lived in the Wild West who masqueraded as a man.
Yeah.
And they never knew she was a man. What's Amos? Susie Amos? Or?
Yeah, Susie Amos was it. Yeah. Susie
Amos?
This is different. People know that this woman's a woman.
Okay.
They don't pretend that she's a guy.
Yeah. Okay.
She doesn't pretend she's a guy.
Well,
she's a woman.
I was just trying to think of the name of that film.
Good sidestep there, Neil.
Yeah, all right.
Well,
so
this unnecessary digression
anyway,
is brought to you by LaCroix.
I'm going to tell you about two things.
Unnecessary digression.
I'm going to tell you, first of all, what's coming up. The Tribeca Film Festival opens in New York today, actually, on the day we're taping this show.
Name a movie, anybody in this room, while Neil continues to look shit up.
I found it. I got it.
Name a movie from the Tribeca Film Festival that got picked up there and became a big hit.
That became a big hit or that it was great?
Well, I'll take either.
All About Nina, great.
All About Nina, oh. Jesus. Can we burn that soapbox?
Okay.
No, something that the American public listening to right now goes, oh, that came out of Tribeca?
No,
I can't think of a thing.
That's very true. There's a lot of
I'm
big
not
movies.
Trying to be mean. It's a great thing. De Niro started it with his partner Jane Rosenthal downtown after 9/11
correct.
To get businesses to open up and do stuff.
Well, here's a few things at Tribeca that you might want to like check out. Mike. What is that noise?
Just keep going. We'll cut that out. Just
all right. First of all, if this thing's called Tribeca Talks, I'm really interested in this. Martin Scorsese and Robert De Niro sit down and talk together at the Beacon Theater about their career together, all the movies that they've made together. I think that's really interesting.
That'll be a tough ticket, and I would like to go
Very
but that's not a movie that America can
no,
go
I'm
see.
I'm just telling you what's at the Tribeca Film Festival.
All right.
There's another talk with David O. Russell and Jennifer Lawrence. Where they talk about their career together. You know?
Okay,
I think that's interesting. All right, movies. There's a movie about Patty Hearst called American Woman. That looks interesting. There's a movie with Zoe Deutsch called Buffalo about a girl who's down and out, and she gets into the debt collecting business. That looks interesting. There's we talked about Charlie Says last week on the show. That's playing there. That's about the women who got brainwashed by Charles Manson. There's a movie about Ted Bundy. We seem to have a serial killer theme going on here called Extremely Wicked, Shocking, and Evil and Vile. And there's two more I'll tell you about. There's a Billy Crystal movie called Standing Up, Falling Down, where he's a there's a stand-up
comic.
He's
a priest, right?
What?
He's a rabbi or something?
No, I think he's like an orthodontist or something like that. What happens is there's a stand-up comic who can't make it in L.A., and he's like a barfly, a dermatologist barfly, and he kind of like they have a relationship together, like a friendly relationship.
Who's the they?
What?
Who else is in it?
This young guy and Billy Crystal. All right. The young guy who
these all sound like they're going to be blockbusters.
And there's a Justin Long comedy called Safe Spaces. So, you know, there's also some...
Haven't heard Justin Long in comedy in a long time, believably stated. All right, so...
There's also a tribute to Spinal Tap, where they're going to bring the cast of Spinal
Tap
on. That
sounds cool.
And a Simpsons, 30th anniversary of The Simpsons, where they're bringing a lot of people that do the voices and the creators behind
it. Well, Harry Shearer is already there, so it just makes sense.
Harry just comes out of a hole.
What do you mean?
Mike, anything interesting to you?
What's that?
He was in Spinal Tap and he does voices.
Nothing that he said sounds interesting. What's more interesting to me is some of the VR stuff that's going on at Tribeca and the new forms of storytelling.
Yes.
You know, I think, you know, one of the conversations we've had on this show is how is storytelling evolving? You know, what's happening on TV and storytelling, what's happening in the movies, what's happening because of digital streaming. And I think, you know, we talk about Avengers making maybe $900 million in one weekend worldwide. That's great. But a video game, which everybody can experience at once, can make $1 billion in a day.
They're always
And that's not uncommon. And I think that that's where we're headed towards entertainment.
Yeah, but Tribeca's not going to unveil video games, right?
No, it's going to Tribeca always has a floor.
It's VR storytelling, I'm telling you. There's a lot of things in that. That's what's exciting to me, like the feature storytelling. That's a short answer is that stuff's even more interesting to me than some of the interesting independent films.
That film festival, Tribeca, always devotes a lot of space to the cutting edge stuff on VR.
Yes.
And I mean, last year I put a pair of VR glasses on, and I was on a farm all of a sudden, and I went to grab a sponge, and all of a sudden somebody put a sponge in my hand. I guess they were watching it on a monitor. I'm like, man, you know, this is kind of
like... sounds like a night at Bill O'Reilly's house.
We're in the dial-up... that's funny. We're at the dial-up stage of VR.
Right.
But I'm telling you, in a few years, it's going to be like Ready Player One, the Spielberg movie.
So, but not now. So what happens at this for VR that becomes anything
America? Go down to the Tribeca Film Fest and check it out. You'll
accessible.
Be.
Are the stories good, or is it just walking around in the jungle shooting?
We're going to find out at the
Yeah. All right. Have you seen stuff there that was impressive? Wasn't jittery? Wasn't like?
No, yeah. It wasn't jittery. But it's interesting because you got to think differently when you're telling a VR story. It's not about looking around, but it's also about the story, and the VR itself has to enhance the story. I saw a presentation at an event, maybe it was last year, where you visit the street where you know the location, the hotel where they shot Martin Luther King. And it's like you see what was on his bed, you see what was going on. It was fascinating, you know, because
who did the one where you could put the goggles on and escape from Mexico up to the United States? No, that was in Iratu or the somebody.
Iratu, yes.
Yeah, somebody like that, did something like last year that was supposed to be great. But the reason I asked that question is we don't really yet see the great filmmakers embracing this,
it's
right?
It's infancy.
I don't think it's going to be them. I think it's a new age. I think it's going to be new.
Oh, that's interesting. All right.
That's
well, there's another talk with Alec Baldwin interviewing Guillermo del Toro, if you're interested. So that's another
thing. Okay. We're all lining up for that. All right.
Let me tell you about a television show. I saw this show called Bless This Mess. And they have a really interesting bunch of cast and people behind this movie. Lake Bell, who Bill
it's Green Acres, basically. I'll cut to the chase.
It's Green Acres, yeah. It's a bunch of, I mean, for Lake Bell and Dax Shepard and Ed Begley Jr.'s in it. And who's the guy from Anchorman? David Koechner?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he's in it. And, you know, Lake Bell, who did this movie that she directed the first episode, she wrote the first episode. Yeah, I'm going, why is she doing Green Acres?
Because she did that in a world about voiceovers.
In a world.
Yeah.
In a
world. So, but here's what you're not saying is that it's a single camera. It's shot on location. I mean, it's a comedy, right? But it's
yeah, but it's not. I mean, I watched the pilot. It's not all that funny. And I'm saying to myself, why are they? You know, network sitcoms are just. I mean, if you look at the quality of the work that's on Netflix and Amazon Prime and YouTube and
yeah, but this sounds like they were trying to do a Netflix comedy. Because it doesn't Hulu. Have an audience and it's single
well,
no, camera
there's
location.
A lot of show. I mean, I'm just saying that this just, it's just there's some slapsticky, stupid shit in there. And I mean, I'm like, yeah, you know, no, it's not a sitcom.
I've seen the promos and the jokes are just very.
It's not a sitcom that's filmed deep. In front of a live studio. Cheers right. was filmed in front of a live studio.
Yes, we
No, it's a single camera thing, but it's dopey. And I'm just going, why are all these talented people doing Green Acres, basically?
Now you know how I feel every week on this podcast. Okay, so no recommendation there. And that yeah. pretty
I like
much.
Lake Bell, though.
I do like Lake Bell. I think she's talented. But.
Yeah, but I don't know why she's doing this. Why is she doing it? I mean, you could be edgier with... If you're going to do Green Acres, you can go on Showtime or something, and you could do an edgy, crazy version of it, and you go, yeah, you know, they couldn't do this in the 60s on television. But, you know, you're doing it now. It's not Green Acres. It's not...
All right, we get it. Well, it's no good.
It's not Ava Gabor with a Hungarian accent.
Who would you cast to be the Ava Gabor...
But you know it's dopey.
Paris
they get
Hilton,
stuck.
Maybe
they get stuck.
He's
on
asking
the...
Who would you put in the role of the Ava Gabor?
Ava Gabor.
Oh, today?
Yeah.
Today.
I'd put in Sofia Vergara.
I was going to say Ava Gabor is probably available. That's, sadly, all right.
Yeah. Is all right. she around?
That's all the time we have.
What do we
this
have next week?
Week
coming up?
What's happening?
Next week we have Long Shot.
Long
yeah.
Shot.
Yeah.
The Intruder.
Very funny movie.
Which I loved.
And yeah. We also have The Intruder, which I think you guys
the
saw.
The Intruder, which we also saw.
Okay, and there's
load
a documentary I saw called Ask Dr. Ruth.
Ask Dr. Ruth.
We saw
We've all seen that too.
We sure did. Okay. And
I spent some time with Dr. Ruth at the Playboy Club the other night, okay. and that's a true story.
And Mike Sargent, Bill McCuddy, myself, and Lisa Rossman taped an episode of Talking Pictures, which will be actually airing next Friday. And we'll tell you more about that next week.
We'll get you a link.
We'll get
That's
you a
right.
link.
That's right. And that'll be Talking Pictures with Neil Rosen.
That's right. It's now called Talking
now
Pictures,
called
with,
Talking
Neil
Pictures
Rosen
with Neil Rosen
for legal reasons.
For wow. Yes, it's no
the legal reason is he hired a lawyer and
no,
said,
no, I don't
want my
be,
name in the
I'd
show.
I'd rather just be called Talking Pictures. But yes, it used to be, it was Talking Pictures all those years in New York One, and then it became Talking Movies. For
no,
some
this is long
reason.
Overdue.
And now it's back to Talking Pictures, but for legal reasons, it's Talking Pictures.
We've all said someone's name should be on that show. It just wasn't yours we were thinking.
Well, as the poster on Bill McCuddy's wall says, help if you were sitting here. And you know,
if you want to buy it, it's on Craigslist.
He's giving me that poster,
all right,
by the way.
We watch the bad movies so you don't have to.
Don't we always? And if you want to reach Mike Sargent, you could reach him on
Yeah, what's your Twitter following?
My Twitter following, you can. I'm on WBAI. I'm on Mondays at 10 p.m. and Thursday mornings at 10 a.m.
Here in the New York area.
You can follow here in the New York area or online at WBAI.org. Or you can follow me on Twitter or Instagram at Mike on Screen, all one word.
Mike on Screen, the best Twitter name on unless your name isn't Mike. And I'm at Bill McCuddy.
And I'm at Neil Rosen.
We're still waiting for.
And Bill Bregoli. You can send them a telegram. Can you still send telegrams today?
No, but you know what Bill has?
Can you actually
A lot of people don't know this, but if you want to get in touch with Bill, he has carrier pigeons.
If you literally wanted to send a telegram, can you send a telegram?
I think you can send money, but I don't think you can send telegrams.
Is there a Western Union office? You go, I want to send a telegram.
There's Western Union for money. They're around to send money, but not telegrams.
I don't think people really send letters for you, Western Union anymore.
Well, anyway, thanks for sitting
we
around.
We are so old, and we prove it every week.
Thank you for sitting around talking movies with us. We'll sit around talking movies again with you next week.